On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Curtis Franklin and Mr. Brian Chi here today. Now, this week we talk about what's going on in organizations as they continually want to hire and stay on top of cybersecurity experts. Some good advice for those organizations. Plus, backing up is one of the first things professionals tell you to do when they're trying to recover from ransomware attacks. But the good question is, are backups trustworthy? We have Mr. Jim McGann, Vice President of Marketing and Business Development from Index Engines, to discuss what you could do and how you can be successful. You shouldn't miss it. It's Wyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 446, recorded June 4th, 2021. The Wild Wild West of Cybersecurity. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Worldwide Technology and HPE. WWT has an innovative culture, thousands of IT engineers, application developers, unmatched labs, and integration centers for testing and deploying technology at scale. WWT helps customers bridge the gap between strategy and execution. To learn more about WWT, visit WWT.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV. Thinking about expanding your IT skills with the certs to prove it? Visit itpro.tv/enterprise for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription when you use code ENTERPRISE30 at checkout. And by Melissa. Like expired milk, 30% of your customers' data goes bad every year. That's money down the drain. Visit Melissa's developer portal for free access to data quality APIs, demos, and code samples. Freshen up your sour data today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. Welcome to Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big, giant world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field, starting with our very own network geek and finder of extraordinary gadgets, Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what have you found this week?
I've been unpacking, and I found my baby Groot.
Very nice. Now, you are all up and running with network and studio as well?
Getting there. It's going to be a work in progress. Lots and lots and lots of boxes trying to find things, and we'll see. It's a work in progress.
There was big news in the observatory this week, right?
Oh, yeah. They had me staying up late monitoring the WOWSA server and so forth. The Aloha Cabled Observatory added a new basic science package and upgraded the camera. The new camera is a full 1080, and it's one of the Q series Axis webcams. And we are streaming that live. I've been sharing the link out on my Twitter feed, and you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get some really interesting creepy crawlies. We've had some shrimp-like things, and we had some nudibranchs going by, and ought to be interesting.
Very cool. Well, speaking of live, we have not one but two experts in their field, starting with our very own enterprise expert and security expert. He's a senior analyst at Omdia. He's our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, how are you, my friend?
Well, I was just going to say that shrimp-like object is the name of my bluegrass band, but other than that, doing fine and enjoying thunderstorms here as the rainy season has begun in Florida. Apart from that, writing for Omdia, preparing some stuff for Dark Reading, and of course, getting ready for Black Hat, which comes up in about 6 weeks, and can't wait. I've got a session going on, as to the rest of the Omdia analysts. It promises to be a good hybrid show with pieces taking place both virtually and live and in person.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, I can't wait for it as well. But you know what I can't wait for? This week's Enterprise News. So what's going on in Enterprise News? Well, I can tell you one thing. What's going to take for organizations to continually hire and stay on top of cybersecurity? Well, we'll talk about that, and we'll hopefully give you some good advice there. Plus, there's some pretty good amounts of ransomware attacks in the recent years, and the U.S. Department of Defense wants to start raising their priority and comparing them to terrorism. We'll talk about it. Plus, backing up is one of the first things professionals to tell you to do in order to recover from ransomware, right? Well, what's a good question? Can backups be trusted? Well, we have Jim McGann. He's Vice President of Marketing and Business Development from Index Engines to discuss what you can do. But first, like we always do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's blips. Now, internet web standards tend to feel like they're stale and stagnant, don't you think? Well, with such an amazing stronghold on browser market share, I would think that companies like Google would start moving forward on newer technology faster. Now, one thing I've actually been waiting for is a new protocol that speeds things up on any connection type. Well, you may have heard of Google's QUIC. It's short for Quick UDP Internet Connections Protocol. Now, the tech is effectively a replacement for TCP, which manages how data is placed into addressed packets, routed, and returned to usable info. Now, Quick uses the faster UDP while also boasting faster recovery. It also provides faster encrypted connections and better handling of network switches. Now, your secure website visits and audio-visual chats and mobile browsing should see some of the largest improvements here. Now, Google first introduced Quick as an experimental Chrome add-on in June 2013 and quickly made it the primary approach to transporting data from apps like Chrome to Google servers. Now, the company submitted Quick to IETF for standard consideration in 2016. Well, guess what? That's right. Google's effort to speed up the internet is now available to everyone. Now, the Internet Engineering Task Force has finally published Google's Quick as an official internet standard, signaling that the faster data transmission technology is sufficiently well established to be used on a broader level. Now, whether or not Quick finds widespread adoption is the next question. While it's now a standard anyone can use, there might not be a rush to ditch TCP given that it's been around since 1974. However, give it time and a little showcasing and showboating, and developers and manufacturers alike might just jump on the Quick wagon.
Well, in thinking about how a cyber attack can hit you, here's one you might not have thought of: higher loan interest rates. According to a study published this week, companies that experience a data breach may not suffer a long-term drop in stock price, but will often have to pay higher loan interest rates and grant other concessions. The academic study conducted by researchers at Yeshiva University in New York City and Hong Kong Polytechnic University found the average company suffering a breach paid almost $3.7 million more in interest every year. That's on a loan of just under $400 million. Businesses with a strong reputation for IT security, which often have more favorable loan terms compared to their peers, suffered more following a breach. Now, these results underscore how banks charge companies for the uncertainty following a breach, said Henry Huang, an associate professor of accounting at Yeshiva University's business school. In fact, breached firms pay an average of 40 basis points, or about 0.4 percentage points, higher interest rates than the average for all companies. And that's compared to 28 basis points for firms with internal control weaknesses. Only financial restatement carried a higher penalty of 65 basis points, according to the study. Researchers also found that criminal breaches, as opposed to accidental data leaks, result in harsher loan terms, as do higher breached record counts. Now, in April, an IOActive researcher found that a data loss eventually typically leads to a 5% drop in stock price, but almost two-thirds of companies recover from that in a month. Vulnerability disclosures cause a 4% drop in stock price, but the impact, again, doesn't last more than a month, the study found. In all of this, there is good news for companies that suffer a breach. Banks rewarded those that took strong actions to improve security and mitigate the impact of the breach, according to researchers.
Well, our friends Charter are apparently charging more money for slower internet on streets that don't have any competition. Well, it's no surprise that cable companies charge lower prices for broadband when they face competition from fiber to the home services. But an article the other day by Stop the Cap provides a good example of how dramatically promotional prices for Charter Spectrum internet service can vary from one street to the next. In their example, Charter charges $20 more per month for slower speeds on the street where it faces no serious competition. When customers in two areas purchase the same speeds, the customer on the street without competition could have to pay $40 more per month and would have their promotional rates expire after only 1 year instead of two. Stop the Cap said it examined promotional offers to new customers in the Metro Rochester, New York market, quote, where Spectrum faces token competition from Frontier's slow-speed DSL service, and a more robust competition in limited areas from Greenlight Network's fiber service. Greenlight fiber is available in 23% of Rochester, while Charter cable is available to homes throughout the city, according to Broadband Now. Greenlight's prices start at $50 per month for 400 megabits per second. Quote, Charter's offers are address sensitive, according to Stop the Cap founder Philip Dampierre. The cable company knows its competition and almost exactly where those competitors offer service. That is why the company asks for your service address before it quotes you pricing. So my big suggestion here is to write your Congress critters, encourage them to work with the public utilities commissions in your state to even out the charges. Now, I will comment. I just moved to a neighborhood in Orlando that actually has very little competition. The interesting thing is my electric company, Duke Energy, when I signed up, they actually had some specials for hooking up my internet. And not only did it get me a longer honeymoon period, shall we say, I get 2 years instead of the 1 year in a lot of places, but I'm actually getting a better rate than I did in Honolulu. And the Honolulu neighborhood actually had three options. So it's kind of interesting and just goes to show you need to shop around.
Well, looks like some bad news for the Internet Exposed VMware vCenter servers this past week. A multi-platform Python-based malware targeting Windows and Linux devices has now been upgraded to a worm, and it's wormed its way into unpatched VMware vCenter servers, making them vulnerable to remote code execution. Now, the malware, dubbed Freakout by Checkpoint researchers, is a obfuscated Python script designed to evade detection using a polymorphic engine and a user mode rootkit that hides malicious files dropped on compromised systems. Now, Freakout spreads itself by exploiting a wide range of OS and apps vulnerabilities and brute forcing passwords over SSH. Now, it then adds the infected fixed devices to an IRC botnet controlled by its masters. Now, the malware's core functionality enables operators to launch DDoS attacks, backdoor infected systems, sniff and exfiltrate network traffic, and deploy XM Rig miners to mine for Monero cryptocurrency. Now, Cisco Telos researchers shared in a report that Freakout's developers have been hard at work improving the malware spreading capabilities since early May, when the botnet's activity has suddenly increased. Now, Freakout bots can scan for new systems to target either by randomly generating network ranges or on its own master command sent over IRC via the command and control server. Now, for each IP address in the scan list, the bot will actually try to use one of the built-in exploits or log in using a hard-coded list of SSH credentials. The VMware vCenter vulnerability CVE-2021-21972 is actually present in the VMCenter plugin for vRealize operations, and it's particularly interesting because it impacts all default vCenter server installations. Now, thousands of unpatched vCenter servers are currently reached over the internet, and as shown by Shodan and Binary Edge. Now, VMware vulnerabilities have also been exploited in the past in ransomware attacks targeting enterprise networks. Now, as Cisco has revealed, Freakout operators have also been seen deploying a custom ransomware strain, showing that they are actively experimenting with new malicious payloads. Now, if you learn anything from TWiET, the one thing you should have gotten out of our weekly discussions is make sure you're patching your servers.
Welcome to the world of unintended consequences. As companies attempt to reduce their carbon footprint, ironically, they're finding that becoming more digital is increasing that footprint. Gordon McKay, head of practice for multilateral organizations at Access Partnerships, says the big six tech companies probably only spend around 4% of their total lobbying spend last year in the states on what we call broadly defined policy issues, and 90% on essential energy policy. That's a marker of just how important this is and just how much the big six realize this. One of the ways CIOs can help reduce carbon emissions, he says, is to look for greener alternatives, like consolidating applications across the enterprise, monitoring energy costs and consumptions, and adopting green data centers. That's according to Sarah Pope, Vice President of the Future of Technology at global consulting firm Capgemini. On one hand, organizations should be reducing their carbon emissions because it's in the best interest of the environment and society. On the other hand, they're increasingly using power-hungry technologies, not the least of which include AI and machine learning. Data storage and compute can be very costly from a carbon footprint point of view. Now, to demonstrate progress in these areas, companies will need a baseline from which to measure that should decompose down to the impacts of departments and groups. CIOs will have a hard time benefiting the organization at large if they don't have a handle on what their own department's carbon emissions look like. In 2019, 53.6 million tons of e-waste were generated worldwide, which reflects an increase of 21% in 5 years, according to United Nations Institute for Training and Research. Access Partnerships McKay said that sustainability is not yet on most CEOs or CIOs' agenda. Sustainability will become an increasingly difficult issue to ignore for brand reputation, regulatory and ethical reasons, though, and as a result, more CEOs should make it a priority, while CIOs should be looking for ways to affect a sustainability within their departments as well as for the company at large. According to IEA, more than 95% of CO2 emissions reductions will be realized as the result of technology, whereas less than 5% will be attributable to behavioral changes.
Well, cyber insurance firms are starting to tap out as ransomware continues to rise. Now, they're mentioning in this article, which happens to be a dark reading, a global insurance carrier now refuses to write new ransomware policies in France while insurers rewrite policies. Are we heading towards a day when ransomware incidents become uninsurable? That's a heck of a headline. Well, in early May, global insurer AXA made a landmark policy decision. The company would stop reimbursing French companies for ransomware payments to cyber criminals. The decision, which reportedly came after French authorities questioned whether the practice had fueled the current epidemic in ransomware attacks, may be just the beginning of a general retreat that will force companies to reconsider their attempts to outsource cyber risk to insurance firms. Already, the massive damages from one damaging crypto worm, NotPetya, caused multiple lawsuits when insurers refused to pay out on cyber insurance claims. Just like after 2004, where Florida experienced a perfect storm of four hurricanes to hit in the same year, insurance companies rolled over and tapped out of the hurricane insurance market. Well, ransomware is becoming the new perfect storm, and insurers are starting to rethink being in that market, which in my mind means it might not be cheaper to pay the ransom in the near future. It really means boardrooms need to actually talk cybersecurity and balance what could happen if you no longer have the ability to let the insurance company pay the ransom.
The International Survey of Tech Professionals from the Thales Group finds some bleak news for the current state of data security. What's the news? Well, the COVID-19 pandemic has upended security norms and security teams are struggling to keep up. Now, are you surprised? Now, the problems appear to be snowballing because the lack of preparation has led to a scramble resulting in poor data protection practices, plus outdated security infrastructure not receiving needed overhauls, and a jumble of new systems that only makes the matters worse. Now, combine that with all priority misalignment between security teams and leadership, and you get, well, you know, a mess. Now, that's what you get for sure. Now, surveys results indicate that there's a reasonable awareness of the risks present in today's environments, but they also show that most organizations need to improve their security posture. Now, there's a lot to unpack in the 28-page report. And not only that, that's not all of it's bad either, but one bright spot is found in the growth of the zero trust security, which 76% of respondents indicated is part of their cloud security strategy. That's good. Now, those are with formal zero trust strategy are less likely to have been breached. Now, that single bright spot is surrounded by bad news driven by pandemic-induced changers that largely pushed the infrastructure into the cloud. Only 20% said that the security infrastructure was ready for the challenge. And in fact, 82% said that they were concerned about the security risks that were with their remote workforce. And 44% were worried that their security systems couldn't meet the task of effectively securing remote work. Despite knowledge of the risks, the necessary changes that would mitigate potential threats haven't happened. In fact, technologies such as encryption and multi-factor auth have not reached saturation levels, such as the majority of the applications and data are fully protected. In fact, just 55% have actually implemented MFA. Now, data security is alarmingly lacking as well. The report found that only 17% said that more than 50% of sensitive cloud-hosted data has actually been encrypted, and only 24% said they have any complete knowledge of where their data is even stored, and only 45% said they have centrally defined cloud policies. The piling on all of that and making matters even worse is the tension between security teams and leadership. That's right. There's a disconnect between the C-suite, management, and practitioners. And if executives don't perceive security issues to be as severe as managers believe, there's likely to be a lack of urgency in driving security improvements. Plus, where does all the money come from when you want to implement those improvements? That's right. Now, what does all this mean? Well, it means senior executives need to ensure they have and obtain more complete understanding of the levels of risk and attack activity that their upfront and frontline staff are actually experiencing and start funding improvements. Now, the first thing you want to do for your organization is also educate yourself and your group and your organization on data storage locations, policies, and ensure where it's all going and where it could go. Knowing is half the battle. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of this week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Worldwide Technology and HPE. Now, WWT is at the forefront of innovation, working with clients all over the world to transform their businesses. Now, at the heart of WWT lies their Advanced Technology Center, or ATC. Now, if you haven't heard of the ATC before, it's a research and testing lab that brings together technologies from a number of leading OEMs. In fact, there's more than $500 million in equipment invested in that lab. Now, the ATC offers hundreds of on-demand and scheduled labs like HPE's Primera Storage Lab. They have a number of other labs as well, and all of them represent the newest advances in multi-cloud architecture, security, networking, primary and secondary storage, data analytics and AI, DevOps, and a ton more. Now, WWT's engineers and partners use the ATC to quickly spin up proof of concept and pilots so its customers can confidently select the best solutions. Now, what will this do is cut your evaluation time from months to weeks. Pretty amazing how fast you can get up and running on a proof of concept. Now, with the ATC, you can test out products and solutions before you go to market, plus access technical articles, expert insights, demonstration videos, and a ton of white papers, hands-on labs, and other tools to help you stay up to date with the latest technology. Not only is the ATC a physical lab space, but WWT has also virtualized it. Now, that means members of their ATC platform can access these amazing resources anywhere in the world 365 days a year. While exploring the ATC platform, make sure to check out WWT's events and communities for more opportunities to learn about technology trends and hear the latest research and insights from their experts. Whatever your business need, WWT can deliver scalable, tried and tested, tailored solutions. WWT brings strategy and execution together to make a new world happen. To learn more about WWT at the ATC and gain access to all their free resources, visit WWT.com/twit and create a free account on their ATC platform. That's WWT.com/twit. And we thank Worldwide Technology and HPE for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites. Now, what is it going to take for organizations to continually hire and stay on top of cybersecurity? Pretty good question, right? Well, the people they hire will need to be qualified, of course, but qualified in a different way with maybe even a different recipe for success. Well, people coming out of school certainly have good training in cybersecurity-related areas like penetration testing or threat hunting, cybersecurity and cryptography. But what you will notice is that sometimes they're actually lacking some of the basic understanding of data communication, and we're more reliant on tools and techniques that actually have, you know, that actual knowledge on the job kind of things. Now, cybersecurity is a complex discipline that actually that needs to evolve and expand over time. And it's been doing so at an exponential rate alongside the digital revolution. Now, what you learn this week might already be obsolete next week in the cybersecurity world. Now, hence, a traditional 3 or 5 year university degree in cybersecurity will be most likely out of date as soon as it's issued. Looking at this way, the important thing to study becomes the underlying fundamentals, like how the technology operates, or how is it connected, how it communicates, how to exploit it later, and how it will continually change the technology itself over time, and how we'll use that change. Now, where does this leave us now, right? Do we teach students to combat fake news and digital vigilantes on social media, or how about new technologies like cloud computing or big data or AI and machine learning? And in fact, what does a chief security information officer or chief information officer do, and how do they make sure that they're delivering on your confidentiality, integrity, and availability objectives with triple degree in computer science, international law, and global politics? Well, a lot of good questions here, right? And I'm going to bring my co-host just in a second to maybe get their second thoughts here. But the discipline is ever-changing, and it's all-encompassing. And that means that some of the successful CISOs out there of the future will be those who have more broader thoughts here and actually who can see the broader threats and compose the best teams to address them. And that means looking outside the box for qualified, motivated candidates. Now, another issue, cybersecurity continues to be understaffed. We have all heard the news on this, and we've heard the stories on it. There continues to be this case, according to ISACA's State of Cybersecurity 2021 report, 61% of respondents indicated their cybersecurity teams are understaffed, and 55% say they actually have unfilled cybersecurity positions. Now, not only that, but teams need candidates who understand law and regulatory compliance and didactics, and never forget marketing and communications. Now, we just talked about how cybersecurity is always changing and it's difficult for professionals to keep up. But what will make them want to keep up? Well, motivation, of course. And cybersecurity is a volatile discipline, and that means it needs people who continuously want to develop themselves and stay up to date. Now, we also need to remember that prior hands-on cybersecurity experience will not prevent the digital threats of tomorrow. We have to continue to learn and continue to evolve. Now, those will come from actually motivated adversaries working on new technologies and thinking about outside the box. And if we stand still, we'll never win. We need to be just as creative and just as motivated. Now, one move to overcome the shortage of cyber skills in cybersecurity is to be more open-minded when we're hiring potential candidates. We don't just need hackers, right? We need individuals capable of critical thinking, independent thought, and the ability to actually challenge those complex problems. Now, a company can achieve greatness here, for sure, but it takes good processes, planning, and, good people. Now, I want to bring my co-host in here because this is an important topic. Chibert, I want to throw this to you first. Is this a case of just more informed CISOs and hiring people, or are there other business components at work here that need to be done?
Actually, I think this solution or the problem actually has a much, much longer tail than a lot of people think. The reality is I've dealt a lot with college students. And obviously, I was working at the University of Hawaii. I was working with quite a few different universities on various projects. And the reality is the students that are coming out of these programs don't understand the underlying technology. The very fact that one of my buddy's favorite questions when he's hiring a new person is, name a layer 3 device. And 99% of the time, they just look at him with a blank stare. Now, cybersecurity is one of those rare fields where you have to constantly be getting yourself updated. There's a long learning process. You don't get a degree and then just stop. So here's a trick. Back in the days when there's lots of magazines, I would get two subscriptions to an industry magazine. I'd tear out the articles that were looked really interesting, slap a staple through it, and stack those up next to my favorite bathroom where I do my business. The reality is keeping up is a really big challenge. Now, in this day of clicking on the story, you're obviously going to have to start listening to different people, podcasts, blogs, and so forth. But keep in mind, the entry level for a blog is very, very low. So that means you're going to have to weed through all these different people to try and get a better feel on their opinions. So to the HR people, you're going to have to stop just looking at formulas. Some of the very best talent that I've hired in the past have horrible resumes. Stop using your HR cap. Let the subject matter experts look at the resumes, look at the information behind them, because there's an awful lot of really, really good talent that fits into the wild, wild west of cybersecurity. And HR groups are passing these talents off wholesale. And I'll just bet you Kurt's chomping at the bit because he's had to hire a lot of this very same kind of talent.
I agree. Let's roll over to Kurt because you talk to a ton of cybersecurity professionals out there. Obviously, it's just not traditional education they need, right?
Oh, it's not. And one of the things that I hear most often from cybersecurity professionals is that when someone is coming into the field, one of the credentials they look for the most is participation in capture the flag. You know, this is seen as a real way to show a couple of things. One is genuine interest in the subject, and the other is real world experience. Now, they realize that most people are not going to get the skills they need to succeed in a capture the flag competition in a classroom setting. Relatively few universities are teaching Capture the Flag 101. Instead, in the academic setting, you're going to get some foundation pieces. But for today's technology, for today's techniques, for today's threat vectors, nothing beats working on a Capture the Flag team. This also points out something else that's critically important, and that is for all of the image of the lone hacker or the lone defender working, you know, deep in an unlit room somewhere, hoodie in place, most cybersecurity is a team effort. Being able to make the contacts, work within the team, and share knowledge is critical for cybersecurity success. And the fact is, most cybersecurity professionals, and especially most of those who take part in activities like Capture the Flag, are eager to share with someone coming into the field. And so it's important that the subject matter experts, the hiring professionals, convey this to the HR team. Find a way within the HR framework to put Capture the Flag participation as one of the primary qualifications, maybe even more important than that dearly beloved academic qualification. And Lou, based on what you said, all of the areas that you talked about in this article are important: the business expertise, the legal expertise, the regulatory expertise. But with just a little bit of work, it's possible to build a requirements list that's impossible for anyone to fulfill until they're my age. You know, it just takes a long time to get a law degree, a master's in engineering, a master's in international relations, plus 10 years of junior cybersecurity expertise. So why not be realistic? Look for some training, but more important, look for that real world experience, even or perhaps especially if it comes through activities like Capture the Flag that are designed to give people the experience they need to get started in this field.
Right. I agree. I think that one of the hardships here is, you know, you obviously get the interview by your resume, and that's a hard challenge sometimes, because some people will, you know, obviously get the interview by their skill set. But once they're in the interview, once they're part of that process, they need to be vetted. They need to be ensured that they can do the things that they need to do. And that is problem solved. That's continuous learning. That is, you know, that is solve the tough challenges. Now, Cheever, you know, you've worked with, and you've probably interviewed a lot of people before. In fact, even your wife has probably interviewed a lot of people before. And how is it that you're going to extract some of those skills that are not necessarily on paper all the time?
Well, my wife is a way great manager. I'm a team lead. So knowing your limitations is like most of the battle right there. One of her things is she got so upset with these new young HR people that she said, stop, quit mucking with them. Send me the raw applications. And she and her second in command sat there and they went through and tried to read between the lines. She found some really, really good talent that were really loyal because she looked beyond just the HR view of the world. So here's one thing I would like to send out to human resource people. Stop sitting in this old mold. You need to sit there and start taking a good hard look at personalities. Can the teams work together? I think that is even more important than experience. Can they work together? Because when teams work together, they build experience exponentially. And that, I think, is why I had such a powerful team in the federal government and why my students did so well. And my students helped build Fedora. So maybe I'm doing it right. I don't know. You tell me.
I think you are, Cheever. I think you are. Well, folks, does it for the bites. But, you know, next up, we have a really great guest to come in and drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. But before we do, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is IT Pro TV. Now, IT Pro TV is the best online source for IT education, whether you're an organization or an individual interested in starting and expanding your IT skills. Now, cybersecurity is one of the most important factors for organizations. Now, IT leaders should be constantly updating their knowledge and understanding of current industry trends and learning the recent details about cybersecurity as often as possible. We just talked about it. Now, this is exactly why individuals and businesses need to go to IT Pro TV. Now, whether you are a cybersecurity novice or an expert, IT Pro TV will provide you with the most up-to-date crucial information and tutorials. Now, check out their cybersecurity courses like MTA Network Fundamentals and MTA Security Fundamentals. Now, June is Hacker Month at IT Pro TV, and we'll have a free weekend with 5 hacking courses. Now, June 12th through the 13th will include EC Council's Certified Ethical Hacker and CompTIA's Pen Test Plus, and they'll also have a webinar on June 17th with YouTuber John Hammond on reverse malware, and will be available on demand thereafter. Now, IT Pro TV gives you the IT training and certification you need to be successful with 7 studios and 1,500 hours of IT training and new content daily. It's the perfect place to learn. Expanding your knowledge in IT overall, well, you can get your certified in Apple, Security Skills, Python, Cisco, and many, many more. They are the official video training partner for CompTIA, so you know you're getting the best IT training around. IT Pro TV also makes it so easy to get a good IT education because you can do it anytime from the comfort of your own home on your own schedule. Now, IT Pro TV's courses are live and on demand worldwide via Chromecast, Roku, Apple TV, PC, or their iOS or Android apps. One reviewer states, I really like the way IT Pro TV makes you feel like you're right in the room with the teachers. I also like how I can watch on Roku. Instruction is really clear, so you can understand the content. Teachers are really great. Go to itpro.tv/enterprise and use code ENTERPRISE30 to receive 30% off all consumer subscriptions. That's itpro.tv/enterprise and use code ENTERPRISE30 for an additional 30% off of the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV, build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twiat Riot. And today we have Jim McGann. He's the Vice President of Marketing and Business Development for Index Engines. Welcome to the show, Jim.
Hey, Lou. Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. Now, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a short journey through tech and what brought you to Index Engines?
Yes. So I started my career in enterprise software, mostly information management, and I was based out of New York. So it was really a lot of financial services stuff. And I got involved with a company that was managing, feeding research data into, hedge funds and financial firms, which I found very interesting. That company got sold off. And then I ended up working for a company out of Yale University, which was founded by Dr. David Lernter, who's, the author of Mirror Worlds, a pretty well-known book. And he created an information management platform, which was really fascinating, but it really just didn't have the back end technology. So I ended up moving over to Index Engines that did have kind of cracked the code in terms of managing large volumes of, petabyte class environments of complex data, including backup data, and have been here for over maybe about 16 years or so. So it's always been in enterprise software, specifically information management.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now we, this brings us to a good topic of backups, because we talk about backups a lot on the show. In fact, we recommend to a lot of organizations and IT pros that, if you want to go up against ransomware attacks, the first thing you want to do is restore your backup. Now we're starting to hear little inklings in the news, and of course, a lot of studies out there showing that you might not be able to trust backups. Is that true?
Well, if backups work the way that you wanted them to recover from a ransomware attack, I mean, Colonial Pipeline wouldn't have been down for more than 12 days. So backups, if it takes you 12 days to get a backup up and running, I'm not sure that's the right solution for a recovery. So the big question is disaster recovery sufficient to solve the cyber recovery problem? And the answer is no, it's very different. A disaster, an earthquake or a fire or a hurricane or flood is very different. It doesn't do anything to your data. It really destroys your infrastructure that you need to rebuild. Cyber attacks are corrupting data and attacking data and stealing data. So it's a different type of attack. So I think, we see customers that have tried to kind of force fit their disaster recovery software and say, hey, we have a cyber recovery solution because we're just making immutable copies and storing them in the cloud or storing them offsite and hoping for the best. But, if you see the time it takes for recovery, you always question is, where's your backups and why aren't you using them? Right?
Right. Now we hear a lot of, we have this rule that we talk about a lot. Obviously we talk about having a backup locally on site that's kind of isolated. We talk about having a cloud backup. We also talk about having, an offline copy somewhere. This type of support means that, like you said, things will take a long time to keep backed up. Also means that backups might not be up to date all the time. What are some [S2] Right. [S1] Of the other recommendations for organizations here that that would allow them to again, disaster recover, but also ensure that their backups are safe?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of different strategies. There's, 3-2-1, there's, make three copies of your data and so on. A backup's a copy of your data and it's, in different locations, whether it be in the cloud, off-premise, at your partner site, a managed service provider, and so on. The challenge or the thing that customers need to think differently about is, are your backups good? And what we've done is we've partnered, one of our key partners is Dell Technologies, and they create an isolated vault. So they replicate data into an isolated vault, air gap it off the network. So cyber criminals don't even know that it exists. So if you put your critical infrastructure in there, Active Directory, network infrastructure, critical core databases, you know, user data that's critical in there, isolate it, air gap it, again, still, and make it immutable. How do you know that that data is good? So it's the question of, you know, checking the integrity of your backups. And in the past, you know, backup administrators and backup strategies really haven't checked the quality or the integrity of the data. So with ransomware and cyber attacks, checking the data so it has resiliency and so that you know that the quality is good is critical. So what we've done, you know, with the Dell Cyber Recovery Vault is, you know, they isolate the data, air gap it off the network. And then with our CyberSense product, is we go in and we apply analytics that are indicative of a cyber attack, you know, corruption, encryption, mass deletions. We apply those analytics to that data in the backup format, so without having to rehydrate it, and then take those analytics into a machine learning engine that comes back with a deterministic. That backup copy has integrity. It's good. When you get attacked, you can recover using that backup copy or an alert saying it looks like there's signs of suspicious behavior. So, you know, it's not that customers and their security, real-time security is, you know, is enough. It's you need to check the resiliency or the integrity of your backup data that when you do get attacked, you know you can recover with confidence.
Right. Now, obviously, a lot of organizations, they don't have tools like this. They don't have necessarily services that are going to help them with that. They're not going to have some of the things you're talking about. Now, we have heard that some organizations after some of these ransomware attacks are able to still, you know, recover slightly from using a backup. But have you seen potentially in the wild things where, you know, maybe even the infection's been, you know, come back or have the issues come back even after a backup?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, we have a customer on the West Coast, a small school system that had been attacked, ended up putting in a, you know, one of our platforms with Dell Cyber Recovery, CyberSense solution. And then within 4 days of deployment, they were attacked again. It's not necessarily that the malware or the ransomware is still sitting on their network. It's once you get attacked and you pay the ransom, you become on a high value target list. So they say, hey, let's hit them again after a couple months because they paid and they'll probably pay again because that's the path of least resistance. So I think, you know, customers getting smarter and putting in smarter technology that will thwart these attacks and allow them to recover is critical because they will get attacked over and over again. And it happens all the time. And if they also take their backups and restore them without checking the integrity and checking to see if there's malware in there, that can execute again. And it's just a vicious cycle that's out there.
Right. Well, when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Jim about backups. I do want to bring my co-host back in too, because they're chomping at the bit here to ask some questions. But before we get to all that, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Melissa. Have you ever forgotten to check the date on a carton of milk? I know I have. It's easy to store it away and just forget about it. And like milk, your customer data can also go bad, sometimes even faster than milk. Now, to put it into perspective, up to 30% of customer data goes bad each year. Now, think about your customer base. That's a lot of customers. And that's when Melissa is there for you. Melissa makes sure your data is accurate and current so you reach the right customers. Their tools have been helping businesses maintain fresh data for over 35 years. That's why over 10,000 businesses trust the address experts. You can verify addresses, emails, phone numbers, and names in real time with Melissa. Melissa's global address verification service verifies addresses for 240 plus countries and territories at the point of entry. You can validate existing customer data and find new customers as well. Tired of having duplicate customer information in your database? Well, with Melissa's data matching, you can eliminate clutter and duplicates, increase accuracy of the database, and reduce the postage and mailing costs. You get the information that completes your customers' profiles better and more thoroughly. Add consumer demographic information to your records, such as property data, marital status, and social media handles. Melissa's flexible deployment options offer different platforms to suit any preference, business size, or budget. With flexible on-premise web service, secure FTP processing, and software as a service delivery options. And Melissa also has their Lookup app. Now, search for addresses, names, and more at your fingertips. Melissa continually undergoes independent security audits to reinforce their commitment to data security, privacy, and compliance requirements. They're SOC 2 HIPAA and GDPR compliant. Congrats to Melissa for being named a leader in address verification by G2 Crowd in their spring 2021 report. Melissa is still supporting communities and qualifying essential workers during COVID-19. See if your organization qualifies for 6 months of free service by applying online at melissa.com. Don't put up with sour customer contact data. Try Melissa's APIs in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the API sandbox 24/7. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. That's melissa.com/twit. And we thank Melissa for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Jim McGann. He's the Vice President of Marketing and Business Development from Index Engines. We talk a little bit about backups and recovery and how the fact that sometimes you just really can't trust those backups when it comes to recovering during ransomware attacks. Now, Jim, we talked a little about some tools that are out there. Like, let's say I'm an organization and I just, you know, I have lots of customer data and pretty much all my value in my company is in the data. What's next? What do I do first to get started to protect myself, not just backing up?
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're focused on is data, checking the integrity of that data. So when you back up, I mean, my analogy I use is, you know, if you back up bad data, so say if you take a bunch of bad food and put it in the refrigerator and expect 2 months later to go to it and come get it out and expect it to be good, it's not going to be good. So I think what we're seeing with backup is to adding integrity checking on the data to look and inspect the content to see if there's any kind of signs of corruption. And that's the important point, and that's what we're providing, is the ability to inspect it, to use analytics and machine learning, some of the latest, greatest technology, to look inside pages of databases and to look inside files to say, hey, is there encryption? Is there signs of corruption? Is there known malware extensions here? So I think the data protection is really turning into more cyber protection, which it adds the layer of integrity checking to make sure that it's reliable. Because if you're backing up your data and you come into the office on Monday and you get that, you know, note that you've been attacked and everything's locked down, that's the biggest challenge these organizations face, is where's my last good backup? And without checking the integrity, they don't know. So they need to build a clean room. They need to store it in a clean room. They need to check it manually and say, hey, is this good enough to put up and rebuild my Active Directory network, to rebuild my Oracle databases? That's not the time to ask those questions. So I think depending on disaster recovery or backup software to do that without checking the integrity, that's the fail that we're seeing. And that's why it takes so long to recover.
Right, right. I do want to bring my co-host back in. I'll throw it over to Chibert first. Chibert?
Well, I'm going to ask you to shift gears just a little bit. There's a lot of people, even the folks on our Discord channel, that are saying this needs to be a bigger penalty. Well, just this week, the Department of Justice has decided and voted that they're going to treat ransomware just like terrorism. And in the same breath, I'm going to say, gee, should we make it at least, you know, some sort of penalty if you don't share when you've been hit? At least share it within a confidential panel like the FBI's InfraGuard, where they reach out to the private sector. Should we be sharing more? And do you think the DOJ move was actually a good move?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest fear is, you know, if you look at Colonial Pipeline, I mean, that's infrastructure, you know, and, you know, the electric grid, the water systems across this country, I don't imagine they have the most robust security. I mean, they may have some security tools in there, but if they could hack into some of these, you know, global financial services firms, they could hack it anywhere. I mean, SolarWinds showed us that they're really creative and they can get in if they want to. So my fear is that as they started attacking infrastructure, and, you know, we had people lining up for gas, but if you don't have water or your electric's out for a week, that's pretty devastating. So I think it's getting to the point of terrorism. We've seen cyber criminals use it, you know, in the Middle East as, you know, as nation state attacks and so on. So it's been happening for a while, but it's definitely getting serious. And I think, you know, we have customers that haven't been attacked and haven't shared that information publicly because it creates a public perception of the company or the hospital or the bank. But when an organization gets attacked, the first place they should call is the FBI. So the FBI does share that information confidentially. The second place they should call is their insurance company. If insurance companies start and stop insuring ransomware, that's going to be a problem. But they'll call their insurance company, who will bring in a vendor to help them recover. It may be Deloitte, or it may be someone like SecureWorks or other post-attack vendors. And they accumulate that knowledge and they share it. I think I agree, Brian, that I think if there was some coordinated effort across all different organizations to share confidentially share this, it would be better, because what they're doing is very creative. They're applying. They're very smart. They're very well funded. They're very sophisticated. They're using the latest, greatest technologies, and they're breaking through, you know, decades old security tools. So I think sharing information is important. We've worked with many companies that have been attacked that you don't know about that in the press. It's not public knowledge. And but I think confidentially they have shared that with, you know, their vendors that they're working with. And but there's no coordinated effort today.
Okay, fast follow-up. What I made mention that I personally think that the skill set of the kids coming into the industry is a little lacking. Kurt actually made mention capture the flag exercises are good. Do you think academia has fallen flat on their face? Do we need to do more? Do we need to do better?
I think we clearly need to do better. I mean, this is a emerging space. I think a lot of customers that we've dealt with, basically once they get attacked, they depend on third-party resources. They go outside. You know, the person that's managing backup or the cybersecurity team, it gets to be beyond their level of knowledge on how to recover. And I mean, you see Colonial Pipeline, 12 days in recovery, they clearly didn't have the resources to get it back up and running, you know, within a day or two, which they should have. And I think a lot of it is because it's I'll give you one example of one customer that we work with. There was probably five or six major players in there trying to help recover, and they were all doing independently different things. So not having a really solid runbook of what it's going to take, what are the steps that you want to go through? And I think it's you know, there's a technology problem, but there's also a process and a procedure problem. And, you know, I think there's smart people that can solve this, but some of the stuff that organizations are facing, I mean, I met with a bunch of small regional school systems, and I'm like, what are you at? Or if they don't, they bring in third parties and it's not very well coordinated. So I think there's a lot of changes that have to happen. I think what we're hearing out of Washington this week is that CEOs need to put more effort behind this. And I think it's junior, senior resources, it's partners, it's strategies, it's a solid runbook on how to recover. But it's not doing the same thing over and over again, because that's not going to work.
Right. Jim, you were very good at talking about some of the issues and some of the ingredients in your last answer, things like playbooks and such. And I want to go into that a little bit more, because – you know, most companies really want an easy answer. They want to feel like, you know, they've got a storage location identified, they bought the software, put it on the schedule for making backups, and now they've got their backup and recovery issues sorted. What ingredients, I mean, whether it's policy or procedure, what things do companies tend to ignore at their peril? What things outside just the technology must companies pay attention to if they want to have a chance at their recovery procedures being effective?
I think these guys are getting in the doors. These terrorists are getting in the door, and SolarWinds showed us that they were in there from March of last year, and it was uncovered in December. So you can't think that you're protected. You have to assume that they're already inside. And I think the important point and what customers are not doing is not checking the integrity of the data. So as data starts to be corrupted, you need to know it right away. So as they start encrypting, start deleting files, you know, now they're stealing data and holding it hostage and threatening to publish it. So knowing where your sensitive data is, knowing how to manage that data. And I think if you just say, you know, making up backup copies of your data, you feel protected without checking the integrity of that data, you're going to be at risk. And that's the point. And that's what we talk to customers about all day long is, you know, make a copy it, isolate it, make it immutable. Those are important. And we talk with, you know, our partners, Dell, about the three I's, you know, isolation, immutability, and intelligence. So checking the data and don't assume that it's good. Assume that, you know, you have some level of corruption. And once you have corruption, understand your backups, understand where the good backups are, and recover quickly. And anytime you see a cyber attack that occurs and, you know, it takes them more than a day to recover, you know that they're struggling with finding the good backups, and you don't want to figure out which are the good backups after the attack. You need to know beforehand every day that your backups are good. And I think adding data integrity check, which is what we're doing with Dell, we're working with a number of other vendors to do that, is critical because customers will have that confidence that when they're attacked, they can recover. Whether you're a small school system, you know, that's working with 20 terabytes of data, or whether you're global financial services firms, which is, you know, petabytes of data, it's the same thing. Checking the integrity is the missing link here.
Okay, so I like the integrity, and you mentioned two different aspects of this, and I want to probe into that just a little bit. You've got the exfiltration issue, where people steal data to use it in some sort of extortion plan. And you've got the accessibility issue, where people will try to encrypt the data in place to deny you access to it. Is it the same set of data integrity checks that help protect against both, or are you looking more at an ecosystem of checks to make sure that you're protecting against both of these risks and others?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So integrity check is critical to see that it's not being corrupted, that it's clean, that it's good, that cyber criminals aren't touching it. The other aspect to this is that, you know, data protection needs to be more of a data management solution where you're, you know, when you open a file and you expect it to see if there's any malware, any corruption in there, check to see if it's sensitive. And if it's sensitive data and it's sitting on your network and it's just open to, you know, inside bad actors, outside bad actors, you have to question yourself, should it be sitting there? And I think with strangers roaming around your networks, you know, having spreadsheets or files or databases of really sensitive customer data that any hacker could get their hands on is probably not a good idea. So it's really, you know, the phase one strategy is just make sure your data has integrity. Phase two is understand what you have and secure it so that it's just not sitting there. I mean, we have customers that are healthcare organizations that are getting patient records stolen. So, you know, for people that have cancer or people that have, you know, medical conditions, if they threaten to publish that out on a wiki, you know, it's just really horrible for a hospital to have to deal with that. And then the question you have to ask is, why are those records sitting in a place that some person overseas can break into your network and just grab it? You know, I think ransomware and cyber attacks is really going to change the way customers and organizations manage their data. And it has to, and it's been a long time coming. And things like GDPR and the privacy, California data privacy, are trying to force those issues. I don't think they've been as effective as the ransomware terrorists will be.
Well, folks, unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. But Jim, thank you so much for being here. Running a little low on time, but we did want to give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can find more information about Index Engines.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you check our website, indexengines.com, there's a bunch of information there specifically about our CyberSense product. We have a very strong partnership with Dell and a number of other providers. One of your sponsors, WWT, they partner with us to distribute CyberSense. So if you're a Dell customer, you can talk to Dell about CyberSense. And what they're doing, and learn more about the approach that they're taking.
Fantastic. Well, folks, you've done it again. You've sat through another Out of the Best Dang Enterprise podcast in the universe. So tune your podcatcher to Wyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes the show possible, especially to my co-host, starting with the radio, Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you and get a hold of you?
It's more unpacking. I'm still looking for a few things on how to I had this really cool shelf thing that I had all my NASs and my cable modems. I'm still trying to find that. It's here someplace. I know I packed it. Anyway, yeah, be that as it may. I love to hear from you. We had a very, very nice conversation with a federal IT specialist that both agreed and disagreed. You know, that's all right. You know, we like trying to tailor our episodes as much as possible to the wants of our viewers. In fact, I just got a ping from someone saying they really wanted to do that. I go, yes, it's number one on the list of the wants from our viewers. And hit me. I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab, on Twitter. I'm also Chibert, spelled C-H-E-E-B-E-R-T, at twit.tv. In fact, we're scrolling through some of the work I was doing. I still help run the world's deepest underwater observatory. We put a new high-def webcam out there. And that's a memorial plaque to the gentleman that got us started. Anyway, I'm also encouraging you, instead of just doing Chibert at twit.tv, why not Twyatt at twit.tv? And that'll hit all the hosts. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your ideas. And yes, I really am I try really hard to take your ideas and match guests to that. Sadly, PR people don't always play nice. But you know what? We're going to keep trying. And thank you for watching.
Thank you, Chibert. Well, we also have to thank Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, where can people find you and all of your work?
Well, Lou, the best way to keep up with me is on Twitter at KG4GWA. I am going to be there doing various things, including, as you see, forwarding some of my favorite comic strips. I'm getting ready for Black Hat, continuing to write for Omdia, researching a number of things. One of the favorite parts of my job is getting to talk to a lot of interesting people. I'll let you know. And if there's something that you would like to know about in the world of cybersecurity, drop me a note. You can drop me a direct message at KG4GWA at Twitter. Or send me a note to the Twit folks, the email that Chibert was talking about, or just wait to see me either virtually or in person at Black Hat USA coming up later this summer.
Thank you, Kurt. Thank you guys for being here. Wouldn't be a show without you. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the listener that comes in each and every week and gets your enterprise and IT news from us. We want to make sure make it easy for you to listen and watch and get your enterprise news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes and the show hosts, the show's notes and the co-host information and guest information and links that we do during the stories and for the show. But more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version or your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your devices and your podcast applications because we're on all of them. So definitely subscribe. Plus, you may have heard we have that Club Twit. Now, what is that? Well, it's a member-only ad-free podcast service with bonus Twit Plus feeds. In fact, join the club for $7 per month and you'll get even exclusive access to a members only Discord channel. We have a ton of great characters in there right now. We're chatting with them. So join the club and be part of this movement. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. It's a great, great offering. Now, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends, your family, your coworkers. Give them the gift of Twyatt because we talk a lot about fun tech topics on this show and I guarantee they'll find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely share it with them. Now, after you subscribe, and you're available live at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays. We do the show live at twit.tv. Come see how the pizza's made. Come see the behind the scenes, all the fun stuff, all the banter we do here at Twit. So definitely come and watch the show live. Plus, if you're going to watch the show live, you can also join our other chat room live too as well, the irc.twit.tv crew. They are a fantastic crew out there. They ask some great questions, and they also give us some great content for the show as well. So definitely be part of the chat room there as well. Now hop over right now. You can follow me at twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. I have some great conversations with people like you. Plus, I post some of my normal work week items there from Microsoft. Like for instance, if you want to customize your office experience, make it more productive for you, definitely go to developers.microsoft.com/office and check out the latest and greatest office scripts. Really cool stuff. It lets you actually create macros and customizations by using JavaScript and TypeScript. So definitely check that out and check out OfficeScript. I also want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Lee Only. So they continue to support us each and every week to do this week in enterprise tech, and we can do the show without them. So thank you for all their support. I also want to thank all the engineers and staff at Twit. We definitely couldn't do the show without them for sure. And I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chee. Chiebert, one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show, and we definitely couldn't do the show without him. Now, before we sign out, we also want to thank our editor. He's our behind-the-scenes man. He edits us, makes us look good. He gets rid of all of our blips and blurps and blips behind the scenes. So thanks so much for that, Victor, as well. And, of course, thank you to our TD as well today, Mr. Ant Pruitt. He's a very busy guy on Twitter. He has amazing shows. What's going on for you in the coming weeks, Ant? And where can people find you and your work?
Hey, yeah. Had a fun week of hands-on photography with twit.tv/hop, where I talked about long exposure and keeping that shutter open a little bit longer and the beautiful photographs that you can create with a slow shutter. And shout out again to Mr. Victor, because he's also the editor on my show, and he always makes me look and sound good, too.
Indeed. Indeed. Thank you, Ant. Well, until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
You may have heard about this story, but are you familiar with the story behind the story? Well, every week on Tech News Weekly, my co-host Micah Sargent and I, Jason Howell, speak to the people who are making and breaking the biggest tech news of the week. We're talking with journalists, we're talking with industry veterans, often we're talking with the people who are responsible for the story. Don't miss Tech News Weekly at twit.tv.